go, Vinny. That's who they were. They've been waiting for him. He's found his touch tonight.
Vinny Pascatino with five RBIs. The Royals use a huge third inning, and they get the W for the sixth straight time. Yes, sirree. The Royals have won six in a row. Hottest team in baseball beat the Astros 11-2 at the K last night. Royals with seven runs in the third. Pascatino with a two-run double, two-run single on Nelson Vasilevskiz. Royals up 4-0. They continue to pile it on. Two RBI double from Hunter Renfroe, and then Pascatino with a homer later on, and the Royals go on to cruise. Pascatino 3-for-3 with a homer, five RBIs, a walk, and two runs scored. Matt Cuchero on Pascatino's night.
Nice relief for him. You know, it's so early in the year and there's so few plate appearances that that'll move the needle for him numbers wise and it'll feel better and all that. But above and beyond, I mean, he used the whole field. You saw him get a hit off a lefty, took a walk, showed some power, so, and five RBIs. So regardless of the score of the game, he competed in every one of those at-bats.
Royals, another great starting pitching performance from Seth Lugo as he moved to 2-0, gave up two runs on seven hits in six innings. Royals are now 8-4. The Astros fall to 4-9, and the Royals go for their second straight home sweep with a 1-10 game this afternoon. Royals are 7-2 at home this year. Brady Singer, 1-0, ERA under 1 in two starts against Hunter Brown of the Astros, who his ERA is over 6. Some pretty amazing notes about the Royals right now. The Royals have allowed the fewest runs in baseball. They have the second highest run differential. They're on a six-game winning streak, the hottest team in the league. They're only one game out of first place in AL Central. Their bullpen, people are making fun of their bullpen, and I tried to tell people on the show, it's a work in progress. It's okay. Chill out. Plenty of time to figure this out. The bullpen over the last six games, all wins. You know how many runs the bullpen has allowed, Dusty?
They're scoreless for like quite a few of them. I'm going to say two.
Zero.
Okay, I didn't know if it was a six-game the whole streak or not.
They have not given up a run. The bullpen has not given up a run in the six wins.
Yeah.
With eight wins, the Royals have exceeded their win total from March and April of last year already. They've exceeded their win total in March, April in 2022, 2018, 2017, 2012, 2006, 2005, 2004. Tells you how bad they've been during all those years. Since 2000, there have been three Royals teams with a winning streak of six games or more in April. The 2003 club won nine. They started year 9-0. That was the Tony Pena club. And the 2015 club won seven in a row in the month of April. And, of course, that team went on to win a World Series. And now this team has won six, and that winning streak perhaps could be higher if they can win this afternoon. Six-game winning streak and counting. And, of course, the 03 team ended the year with a winning record of 83-79. So that bodes well for the future with the Royals. And it is pretty amazing. The Royals have nine quality starts in 12 games. That hasn't happened in Major League Baseball since 2020. Bullpen hasn't allowed a run in six straight games. Randy Jazierli says the Royals have already won three games by nine-plus runs in 2023. The entire year, they won three games by nine-plus runs. They've done that, and we're only April the 11th. And Randy had some other interesting stuff, because sometimes he can come across a little bit negative. But how about this one? The single most impressive stat of the season for the Royals, their pitching staff has surrendered four home runs all year in 108 innings. Of course, Jordan Lyles barely pitching helps that. But since 1995, just four pitchers have thrown 108 innings in a season while allowing no more than four homers. We're talking about the entire Royals staff has only allowed four home runs in 108 innings. The Royals' run differential is plus 29. 3 years ago, when the Royals went 15-9 in April, they were outscored, but they were 15-9. So you kind of knew that was a little bit of fool's gold. This year, they've scored nearly twice as many runs as they've allowed. They're playing better than their 8-4 record even indicates, which we talk about the bullpen blew a couple. Pretty amazing stuff what the Royals are doing right now. And keep going, man. Just keep doing what you're doing. There's nothing that you need to change. And I just mentioned this the other day on the show, I think earlier this week. The biggest question to me is not the bullpen, because I think the bullpen would get figured out. Right now, it looks pretty good. Now, they'll have their ups and their downs. The rotation's not going to keep doing what they're doing, but if they do anything close to it, that's awesome. We knew that'd be improved. But to me, the biggest question was offense. You know, will these guys come around, some of the younger guys, And we were talking about Bobby Witt Jr. is off to a decent start. Mikel Garcia off to a decent start. Salvi's okay. Hunter Renfro has been struggling. Vinny Pascatino has been struggling. Wait till a few of these guys get hot. Well, Pascatino finally broke out last night. So now suddenly if Vinny's hitting well, that changes things in this lineup. Renfro's now starting to stroke the ball a little bit too. So, hey, if you're a Royals fan, you got to be pretty excited, which leads me to my shameless plug. You need to join us for the Royals bus trip on Sunday, May the 5th, as we'll see the boys in blue, the hottest team in baseball right now, against the defending World Series champion Texas Rangers. It'll be a preview of the future World Series champion 2024 Royals versus the old World Series champion Texas Rangers from last year. Look forward to that. If you'd like to go, give us a call, 545-3220. We provide snacks, drinks on the bus, not alcoholic, okay? We don't do that. We're not a party booze cruise, all right? Not this time, anyway. Maybe on my final days, that'll be how it works. But, and so we have some trivia. We give away some prizes. We have a lot of fun. If you like to go, kick back. You can sleep on the way there, on the way back. We stopped to eat on the way back from the game. Now, you're responsible for that, but your ticket for the bus trip includes your ticket to the game. It includes the gas, the fuel. You don't have to worry about parking or anything like that. And we provide snacks and drinks. And like I said, you could win some prizes. And we just have a really good time. So the people that have gone, they know that we have a great time. And we have about 10 seats, I think, available for purchase for the public. The rest of them are going to go to our sign-up winners at our locations across North Central Kansas. So you can sign up at all those locations, or you could simply be safe and go ahead and buy your ticket for a Royals bus trip. Give us a call at the station. We'll tell you more. 545-3220. We leave about, what is it, 8 in the morning, I think, there from the Bullet parking lot, and then we get to the game, usually about a good hour before the game, so you can check everything out if you haven't been there for a while or if you've never been to Kauffman Stadium and you're a first-time Royals attendee. And then we stop on the way to eat on the way back, and then we get home usually between 9 and 10 o'clock. If the game goes extra innings, we might get back later. If the game is shorter and goes quicker, then we might be back by 9 or a little bit ahead of that. With the pitch clock, that definitely helps us get back a little bit sooner. So if you'd like to go, give us a call, 545-3220. This is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. So the Royals are red hot. And speaking of the diamond, there's some local softball today.
Yeah, not a lot going on, but a couple area teams are playing. Sylvan Lucas is hosting Plainville today, 4 o'clock start time this afternoon there in Sylvan Grove. And then Concordia is hosting Republic County at 4 o'clock as well in a doubleheader here this afternoon. So that's what's going on as far as softball is concerned today in the area. We also have, and we're going to hear from Coach Corey Booker here in a moment, the first Sand Greens Golf Invitational of the season is taking place starting here about 42 minutes. If they start on time anyway, the St. John's Invitational at Glasgow is starting this morning at 10 o'clock. And pretty much all of our area NPL teams that are playing are competing in this one: Lakeside, Pike Valley, Rock Hill, St. John's, Southern Cloud, and Tipton. So that's coming up here today there in Glasgow. So that's a look at what we have as far as local sports today. You can always find the schedules for local sports at nckssports.com.
Coming up on the sports ticket, the WNBA makes a huge announcement. The Caitlin Clark effect is real. We'll explain how wild it is already. Chiefs wide receiver is in trouble with the law, facing charges. And we'll get some input from a USA Today writer about that, which is kind of interesting. The Masters begins today. It's really arguably the biggest golf tournament of the season, and it starts today. John Calipari is leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas. We'll explain how it affects Jerome Tang. If you don't understand how that all works, we'll connect the dots coming up in just a little bit. But in 30 seconds, we'll be joined by the head golf coach at Lakeside, Corey Booker.
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiefer Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
And welcome back here on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com on the Sports Ticket. We have special guest Corey Booker with us, the head coach of the Lakeside Boys Golf Team. Coach, your team has been three-time state champions, had a three-peat last year in Sand Greens Golf, and obviously the bar has been set high for these kids and the group that you have. You've actually had one meet already, and we'll talk about that coming up here momentarily. But just kind of looking at this year's team, you did lose four off of that varsity team last year, Taryn Winkle, Ross Hudson, Eli Hahn, and Reed Walsh. So you're looking to replace some guys there on that varsity roster. You do have some staples in Jace Cunningham and Gabe Smith back for you. Just kind of looking at this year's team, and what you need to do to replace a great group. How have things gone so far for you?
It's going well. The kids, you know, they take their golf pretty serious and work at it real hard. So as a coach, it's not really difficult to really coach, because they want to be out there and they want to practice. Like you said, I got Jace coming back, who was defending state champion last year. And Gabe Smith, who played a lot of varsity, but he didn't get to go on the state team because we were only allowed five. And then we've got a couple of kids that played JV last year that I was able to move up. Ian Crescine, who played quite a bit of JV last year and will push some guys as well. And Jackson Hardy, I'll be able to move up. And then from there, you know, it's just some younger guys that players that I'll have to possibly push them a little bit, and they'll get better as they go. But they've worked at it very hard.
Is it a lot easier too to get kids out and to stay focused on it when you have such success that you've had, that they kind of want to carry that tradition on and maybe be a part of that?
Yes, and years past for sure. It's been kind of that way. Mm-hmm. With this group and the kids I have. I have four freshmen that came out, but two of those kids that came out, their dads and their parents golf a lot. Mm-hmm. And so really for them to come out, whether we were winning state champions or not, wouldn't make much difference. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they would have been out regardless. So you do get maybe a few of them come out because of that. But I generally, the kids that have been coming out, just they like golf. So that's kind of where they're pressing. And I've had kids that usually did both track and golf. This year I don't. None of them were doing both.
So you move forward now, and you've actually already had a meet. It was a grass greens meet that was supposed to be at Smith Center, but then you know, some of the weather and issues, they moved it over to Phillipsburg, what have you. But it looks like you had a little bit of success there. How did it play out there that first meet last week for you?
Yeah, I just took the top four that I'd kind of brought back from last year, and Jace ended up placing fourth on the grass and had a pretty good day. It was a brutally windy day. That's kind of hard to get a day anymore that doesn't have the wind blowing, so it was tough. They'd never played Phillipsburg before, and I was pretty pleased. We didn't putt very well, obviously, but... I kind of expected a little bit of that, but hitting the ball in the fairway and hitting the ball to the green, it's pretty much the same game. So I wasn't disappointed in them. I thought maybe we might be able to team medal, but we didn't quite have enough. We were just, I think, fourth, just behind Beloit. But they got one in under their belt, and I always like to play at least one grass, if not two, if I can during a year, just to let the kids get a feel for both types of games.
You have your first sand today. This used to actually be on grass at Beloit, the St. John's Invitational, but you're now over in Glasgow now, and obviously it kind of makes more sense with all these teams being Sand Greens teams. As you open out with the first Sand Greens meet today in Glasgow, you'll obviously take on Lakeside and Pike Valley, Rock Hills, St. John's, Glasgow, Miltonville, Tipton are all the teams that are involved with that. So a lot of the teams that you see pretty much all year, so you're familiar with the competition that you'll see. How do you feel you stack up with kind of these Northern Plains League teams this year?
Well, I'd hope that we'll be competitive with them for sure, with the returners that I have. But, you know, teams have returners back too as well, and this will be the first time all but two of my golfers have played at Glasgow, so it's going to be a new experience for them. And several of these teams have got, you know, quite a few coming back. St. John's has got a good nucleus coming back. Tipton's got a good nucleus coming back. Riley County and Pike Valley. So Rock Hills, they all have some pretty good golfers that are coming back. It's just whether they can put, you know, three or four of them together with them at the point for team scores. But looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how the kids do play. We haven't, you know, we've played quite a bit on our own course, and I know where they're scoring there. But to get on a course that you know, four of them have never played and never been on, it'll be a new experience for them. And hopefully they handle it fairly well. There's a couple of holes that are pretty tough and could really balloon scores if you don't play them smart. So looking forward to it.
I know I ask you this every year, and this year might be the toughest year to kind of figure this out. But obviously in the middle of this three-time state winning streak that you have with this team, do you feel like you've got a group that could go for four? And I know you talked about the NPL teams, but is there anybody else around the state that maybe is a concern for you?
Well, and, you know, Riley County's not, you know, in our league, and they always have some pretty good ones. Cottonwood Falls, Chase County would be in it. Logan is coming back in it again, and so I don't really know too much about what they'll have or for this. But, you know, I feel good about our chances to compete every year just because the kids work at it pretty hard. But, you know, golf can be a fickle game. It don't take much to really, you know, mess up one score or two scores here and there. So I look forward to the competition. So I can't really tell you exactly where we stack up. I'll wait and kind of see how that goes after the first couple of sand meets.
Corey Booker, head coach of the Lakeside Golf Team here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Coach, we thank you for the time, as always, and best of luck as you open out the season today.
All right. Thank you, Dusty. Appreciate it.
All right, so Corey Booker, golf coach of Lakeside, is weather starting to get a little bit better for golf and spring sports, finally.
Yeah, it's been nice the last few days. It's supposed to be windy again today, though, so that's going to be fun for the golfers to go out there. Yeah, Corey did tell me that first meet they had it was at Phillipsburg Smith Center hosted. He's like, man, the wind was heavy that day, and I got a lot of golfers that are kind of just going out for the first time here as far as competition's concerned, and you got to teach them different ways to swing because of the wind. So, but yeah, it's going to be a fun year, I think, for the Lakeside teams and all the Sand Greens golf teams getting their season started today there at St. John's, so we'll continue to track that and see if Lakeside can put themselves back on the top in Sand Green State Golf this year.
All right, turn our attention to Rashee Rice's situation. Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice faces eight charges related to the six-car crash he was involved in on a Dallas freeway on March the 31st. According to WFAA-TV in Dallas, the police report also said that marijuana was found in both cars, as well as credit cards, a $16,500 check, a diamond chain, and a Chiefs playbook. Rice was leasing the Lamborghini from the Classic Lifestyle, said Kyle Coker, an attorney for the Dallas-based exotic car rental company. West said the Corvette belonged to Rice, so Rice leased the Lamborghini and owned the Corvette. Police said the passengers in the two speeding sports cars who left the scene will not be charged. That's the passengers in those cars, not their fault. Aggravated assault, a second-degree felony, is punishable by up to 20 years in prison. That's one of the charges Rashee Rice is facing. The others, collision involving bodily injury, a third-degree felony, is punishable by up to 10 years in prison, and collision involving injury is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. The Chiefs have not commented on the situation involving Rashee Rice, but the NFL is obviously monitoring it against the backdrop of its personal conduct policy. A suspension and or fine could follow. Jarrett Bell of USA Today wrote a scathing article about Rashee Rice's involvement in this, and I'll read some of the excerpts from this article. He says, and I quote, "If you saw the dash cam video of the crash, you know. Let the church say amen. It's a miracle that no one was killed when Rashee Rice, driving a leased Lamborghini, Urus SUV, and Theodore Knox, believed to be an SMU football player, driving a Corvette registered to Rice, foolishly tried squeezing by traffic at a high speed along the left shoulder to ignite the chain reaction collision that took out six other cars. For all the skill, dedication, and health that it took for Rice to make it to NFL, he progressed steadily last season and set an NFL postseason rookie record with 26 receptions. He was willing to gamble it all away for the thrill of a freeway race? Makes no sense. Even worse, Rice layered another bad decision on top of the initial choice. Rice, along with Knox and their passengers, quickly fled from the scene on foot. Amid the chaos after the crash, with vehicles spun out of control and scattered wreckage, they walked away. That's some kind of arrogance. Rice and his companions didn't have enough concern or empathy to even check on the innocent people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time to absorb the collisions that they caused. And never mind the duty of exchanging insurance information at the scene. Just heartless. One of the victims, Kayla Quinn, told WFAA-TV in Dallas that her vehicle was hit by both of the racing cars, in the side and in the rear, with her four-year-old son in the backseat. She described the trauma inflicted on her little boy. She said he shook uncontrollably for an hour. The next day, she said the entire left part of her body ached. She also expressed gratitude that it wasn't worse.
I think that I'm just like, when I'm listening to that, all the people that were like that right after it happened. Well, nobody died. It's all right. You know, like that's the response that a lot of people had.
They're right? Still victims. They just happen to be alive.
People still have trauma from stuff like that.
Ask Brett Reed. Ask the girl. Yes. Brett Reed did too.
I'm like, that's as you're reading that, and it's like people focus so much about what's going to hurt something that they love. Mm-hmm. That's not even tangible. You know what I mean? Like, right. We're Chiefs fans. We love the Chiefs.
Sure.
And when I see this story, it's on Easter Sunday as I'm seeing it, right? And it's like, what are we doing, Rashee Rice, is my first thought. And then I see all the comments of like, well, nobody died, and everybody's just worried about how this is going to affect the Chiefs.
Of course.
I mean, nobody thinks about how it actually affected the people that were in the four other vehicles that were part of this.
Nobody stops to say, what if that were my family?
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, I can't imagine if I'm a four-year-old kid and something like this happened in my life. And I mean, I'm going to have nightmares about that.
Sure.
Like, that's just going to happen because you're growing as a human. And so it's very reckless, and we all know that already. But I don't think that people kind of want to process that and understand it. Because they're just thinking about a three-peat. Basically, that's what's in my mind.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it's like, kind of process this the way a human would process this. And understand that this is not cool. This is not something that you're just going to brush off.
No.
And so, you know, I as I've gotten older, I've stopped worrying about those parts of these kind of stories and start thinking about the actual humans that are involved in it, mm-hmm. other than the football player, or the baseball player, or the basketball player, or whoever it might be, right? And so it's bad. It's stuff that should never be done, and it's immature is what it is, if you're asking me, and not being able to handle, obviously, the success that you had and the vehicles that you purchased because of that success, or leased because of that success. I mean, I know people are young and I know people make mistakes, but these people don't. When you're doing things like this, you're just not understanding the whole concept of who you actually are and what you're actually doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many people that have been affected by this, alive or not. There's so many people that have been affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously, I think, you know, they're going to learn. Rashee Rice will learn who was affected and how that's going to affect his life moving forward. And there will be no doubt of suspension for Rashee Rice and all those things that would come with that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And there's legal stuff coming up that we don't even know about.
Will he serve jail
time? If
he
even gets through possible jail time. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that still has to come from this. But, you know, you make the mistakes and you got to live with the consequences of them. But at the same time, people need to understand that there were actually people that were affected by this.
It's a really bad look when you caused everything and then you ran away.
100%. Terrible look.
If you would have stuck around and be like, oh, okay, and did the right thing after you caused the problem, you might have a little more leniency. See, this is what happens is Chiefs fans, we think right away, oh, no, how's that going to affect my football team? Oh, no, how's that going to affect getting a three-peat? Oh, no, our wide receiving core, we got Hollywood Brown, we were going to get better, and now we have this problem. And you know what? The Chiefs will still play without Rashee Rice if he's suspended or in jail. They'll still move forward. And you know what? They could still be three-peat. But you're right. Fans don't think logically. We know fan is short for fanatical. I want to share this story because it kind of ties in with what happened with Rashee Rice, okay? And you probably know by now that Andy Reid's one of his kids, Britt Reid, one of his sons, who was an assistant coach with the Kansas City Chiefs, was intoxicated back in 2001, hit a car, and Ariel Young, who was in the car, was 5 years old in 2021. She was in one of two cars that Britt Reid hit while he was driving drunk at a speed of 83 miles per hour. She was one of six people injured, suffered severe brain damage. She spent 2 months in the hospital and was in a coma for 11 days. Okay? Britt Reid has previous criminal charges on his record. Was an assistant linebackers coach at the time and struck a plea deal for a felony count of driving while intoxicated, resulting in serious physical injury. The maximum sentence for his charges was 7 years. Okay? He was sentenced to three. So the mom of this girl, who will never be the same because Britt Reid was an idiot. I don't care if Britt Reid's Andy Reid's son or not. I don't care if I don't care if Patrick Mahomes did this. He is an idiot if he did it too. Because this is real life. But the mother of that 5-year-old, Felicia Miller, a few months ago, gave her first public interview since Britt Reid, who is the son of Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, was freed from prison earlier this month. Why? His sentence was commuted by the governor of Missouri. She says, and I quote, "I was really pissed about it. That's why I needed this whole week to take some time just to calm down about the whole situation. I was angry, and then I was like, dang, this man didn't even do a whole 2 years, and he's already out of prison. If the roles were reversed, oh, it would be a complete different situation. Because look who we're talking about. We're talking about Britt Reid. He was the assistant coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, and we're in Kansas City. If it was just me, just somebody driving down the road, especially if I was drunk and slammed into his car, and he had his child in the car, and his child was injured, it would have been over for me. My whole life would have been over." End of quote. Agreed.
100% agree.
She's straight on right. Listen, if this were me, you, Felicia Miller, or any Joe Schmo or Jane Schmo that was racing on a freeway at 6:20 in the evening in Dallas, in Fort Worth, and caused all that and then left the scene, we'd already be in jail.
Yeah. There's no warrants out right now. We're in jail.
We would be in jail immediately. They would seek us out, find us, we'd turn ourselves in. We would be in jail.
If we had contact with them as Rashee Rice has.
Yes.
That's it at that point.
Yes.
Until the process goes through, right? Or somebody gave them enough money to get us out of there until the rest of the process goes through.
Do you think that if that were you, me, or any of our listeners out there that did what Britt Reid did, do you think our service would have been commuted after less than 2 years?
No, we wouldn't have got three, we'd have got seven.
We would have got seven, right. It's the double standard that we live in. And so when Chiefs fans get all worried about whether Rashee Rice can play football, that should be the least of Rashee Rice's concerns right now. And it honestly shouldn't be, it shouldn't even register on your concern list in your life. Because I understand if the Chiefs aren't allowed to play because they don't have enough players and they have to forfeit. Okay, I understand that somewhat, although life will go on even if that happens. But the Chiefs have lost players due to suspension before. They've lost guys that have left as free agents. They've got guys that have gotten hurt. They lose their offensive coordinator. They don't skip a beat. They lose Britt Reid. Did that really hurt them at linebacker? I'd argue it actually helped them. But you have a 5-year-old girl who has severe brain injuries and trauma and will never be the same person because Britt Reid was a dumbass. You know, I'm just going to say what it is. And Britt Reid,
truth is the truth.
And he had a history prior to that.
Yeah.
If that is you or me without a history, we're in jail for 7 years. With a history, who knows what else we get thrown at us. And then there are Chiefs fans actually more concerned about whether Rashee Rice is going to play on week one than care about, well, nobody died. Yeah, but there were cars damaged. People now have to deal with working with insurance companies to get their money, right? There's a whole bunch of headaches caused by that. And that's the least of the concerns. Don't get me wrong. The most important thing is nobody was killed. But there were people that were injured in this accident. There are people that were injured mentally and physically. There is trauma that goes involved with these things. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, just put yourself in the shoes of the regular people driving, because you are regular people that are listening out there. If you're driving down Highway 24 or Highway 36 or Highway 81 or 75 or 135 or I-70, I don't care where, I-80 in Nebraska, and there's two-lane traffic, and somebody is racing around you on the shoulder, going about out of hell, your heart probably stops.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it causes a problem, and now there's a boom, 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 six vehicle collision. And I haven't seen the dash cam video, but Jared Bell, USA Today, says it's a miracle nobody died.
It is, yeah. I've seen it.
I haven't seen it. Now, I know you can sit here and say, and I've even said it, Rashee Rice, I don't think, is a horrible person. Rashee Rice, I think, was having fun. It was in the spur of the moment, as I talk with my youngest, because young people, especially men and young boys that can drive, they are thrill seekers. They want to see how fast they can drive. Dusty talked about how he's done it before. I've done it before when I was younger. You want to see? Now, I didn't do it on a two-lane highway, and I didn't do it on interstate.
I'm by myself.
But I did it on asphalt road.
Right? Yeah.
I've done asphalt road. I did it on a country dirt road, which is stupid as heck looking back on it. Okay?
Exactly.
Now, I didn't have a Lamborghini to see how high I could go. All right?
Corvette.
Or a Corvette. But I did some of those things, and at the moment, you're not thinking about, what if I die? You're not thinking, what if I wreck? You're not thinking, what if somebody comes down the road and I run into them? So I do try to put that in perspective. But having said that, Rashee Rice is out of college, okay? He's 23, still young. We all make mistakes. But there are consequences for your actions, whether you meant to do anything or not, okay? Like, if you didn't, you went out to the bar and you're only going to have a drink or two, you didn't mean to do anything, but then your buddies got you involved to drink another few, and next thing you know, you're intoxicated. You chose to get behind the wheel, and then you drive, and you run into a woman with a five-year-old and cause severe brain trauma, something like that. Well, you know what? You didn't intend for anything to happen, but you still did what you did with your own volition, and being impaired, you still take responsibility for that, and you almost killed somebody, all right? Or in some cases, people have killed people driving drunk. And that's just one example. Driving high, you know, whatever the case may be, okay, you're not in any condition to drive, so forth and so on. I'll tell you this. If you're 90 years old, 80 years old, 70 years old, 60 years old, and you have all kinds of physical disabilities, and you have a hard time even moving your foot from the gas to the brake pedal, you're no different. You're putting people's lives at stake, too, and you shouldn't be driving. You don't have to be intoxicated to be not driving. There are consequences for your actions, okay? If you have a history of seizures and you continue to drive, or you drive without a license and it's revoked or suspended, there are consequences for your actions. Do you intend to go get pulled over by the cop with an expired license? You don't intend to, but you chose to go drive without a license that's valid. You chose to go drive when you knew you had all kinds of possibility of seizures. You knew you drove when you knew you could barely get in the car and can barely move, and somehow you thought you can move your foot from the brake to the gas quick enough and this and that and whatever else. There consequences for your actions, whether it's legal or illegal, okay? And so people's lives are affected. So when people go, well, nobody died, but there are victims. Well, they're not victims, they're not dead. No, you can be a victim and not be dead. Ask anybody that's been raped. They're not dead, but internally they kind of are, okay? I know people that have been assaulted, sexually assaulted, okay? You can't imagine how it messes up their life. Forever! But they're not dead, but a part of them is. So there are consequences for your actions. We all have to deal with this. What really is a bunch of bullcrap, but it is society, it is the world we live in, and we know there's a double standard all the time. There's a double standard all the time. It isn't necessarily what you know or how good you are. It's sometimes who you know. You might not be as smart as this person, but it's your connections or it's politics. You've got a name in a community, so you get extracurricular activity benefits. Or you have a name in your community, so when you get in trouble with the law, the cop lets you off, but the other person that drives through doesn't get off because they're driving a Texas car, did the same thing that the person that has this big prominent name in small town America has, and the cop goes, oh, hey, buddy, it's me, oh, hey, it's okay, you went 90 and a 60, we'll just give you a warning. Here comes a Texas one, boom! Drill them, $300 fine and ticket. Well, wait a minute. They did the exact same thing. Yeah, but I know this guy. He's just having a good time. Listen, if you don't think law enforcement decides differently on things, you got another thing coming. I know it's happened. It's happened in a negative way to me, and it's happened in a positive way to me. I know one time I got off in regards to not having to pay for a ticket because of someone I know. I will tell you this. I benefited from that. There's another time when somebody I knew didn't get what they should have got, and I did because I'm not from here. I'm a transplant, but somebody from Beloit that's been here for a while, by golly, they did worse than I did, and they are swimming free. So it happens in small town America. It happens, I mean, let's be honest, probably happens in your own household, you know? I mean, one kid, the oldest kid sometimes gets punished more than the younger kid. You know, as an older kid, I'm the oldest, and I've heard it from my oldest son. He says, you know, such and such, our youngest gets away with more. And I'm like, you know, maybe, maybe. And, oh, you defend him more. I'm like, there's like an 8-year difference between the two of you, so it's kind of hard to compare, you know, but you do benefit. You get the new clothes, and your brothers get the hand-me-downs. You get to be the first to experience these things. Granted, one thing I'm still, I guess, not sore about, but when I was the oldest kid, I am the oldest kid, and there's two in my family. I have a younger sister, and you're the youngest, so you benefit from the youngest, but there's cons and pros of that, and I'm the oldest, pros and cons. And one of the cons for me was my curfew was a certain time. And then when my sister rolled into high school, her time was later. Why? Because they were more comfortable, because I was a pretty good person that didn't violate my curfew. I was responsible, so that my family felt they were comfortable enough to let my sister stay out a little bit longer. Well, I helped do that for her. What do I get? Well, you're the oldest. You got other benefits. What were they? Well, I can't name them right now. Whatever. So there's pros and cons of being oldest, youngest. Sometimes there's unintended consequences within your own house. But the point I'm trying to make is there are double standards wherever you go. There's double standards in the radio industry. There's a double standard in the banking industry. There's a double standard. For instance, the whole the mortgage crisis. You've seen all the documentaries. One person got charged. These big, huge, rich people that were behind this whole reverse mortgage, whatever crisis that was. And there's all kinds of documentaries on it that put this company in an economic problem or whatever you want to call it. Recession, whatever. They got scot-free. Mm-hmm. Now, why is that? But then Joe Schmo, who's a middle guy, he's the one that was just kind of an accomplice, and boom, throw the book at him. Why? Because you got to make an example of somebody, and we don't know that person. They're not our buddy, or this person's willing to pay me off, or this person can't afford to pay me off, so you get off free. So back to the Chiefs. If Rashee Rice is Rashee Wright, and he's a local school custodian, or an insurance agent in Dallas, and his good buddy is a physical trainer at a local fitness center, and those two get behind the wheels of a Camaro and a Dodge Challenger, because they're not going to afford the cars Rashee Rice had, as I'm talking about, and they end up racing at 6:20 in the evening in Dallas or Fort Worth on a freeway with some traffic. And they cause everything they have that Rashee Rice did. And then they walk away. First of all, they're not walking free as long as Rashee Rice has been.
No.
So it is a double standard. No question about it. But for you Chiefs fans, don't be those people. Don't be like all these other sports teams fans, which you are. You might not be personally. You might get it. But if you have been thinking that way, hopefully we got you to think a little bit more outside the box and understand. And the other thing is, what if that were your kid that was in the back of the car that's traumatized? What if that were you driving, or your wife, or whoever it might be? You wouldn't give a bleep if it was a Chiefs player, would you? Well, you know, oh, you're mad as hell. God, that is a bunch of crap. We got to sue these people. You almost got killed, honey, and our kid is traumatized. Yeah, but it was Rashee Rice, wide receiver of Chiefs. Oh, well, that's okay. Would you act that way? No, you wouldn't.
No.
You wouldn't care if it's your favorite team. You shouldn't. You sure as hell shouldn't. You shouldn't care if it's Patrick Mahomes. If it's Travis Kelce or Patrick Mahomes, your two favorite NFL players, or Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, whoever the heck it is, Aaron Rodgers, it don't matter. Whoever your favorite player is, favorite team. If it's Andy Reid driving himself and racing, who knows? If those are your favorite people, but they're the ones that cause all the problems, and you have your wife gets seriously hurt, or your wife gets killed, or your 5-year-old has severe brain trauma for the rest of their life because of this, you're going to cut them some slack because they're a Chief? No, you're not.
I'm going to redirect how I think about those people.
Yes. I'm suddenly probably not going to be Chiefs fan. I'm not going to be a law enforcement fan in Dallas if he gets off. These guys get off. I'm not going to be happy with the system. I'm not going to be pleased with any of this stuff. And I'm not going to care if he's a star on the Chiefs and it's my favorite team. Maybe there are some people out there that would cut a little leniency because of that. And if that's the case, then that's messed up. Because that means you care about a team and the Chiefs more than your own family.
And then your own life, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, who knows?
Oh, I bet you there's people out there that would be that
maybe
way.
Maybe some of them people in them four other vehicles were SMU fans. I mean, both of these guys were SMU football players at one point. So
yeah.
It's like, do I feel better or bad about that, that they're SMU football players, or they were one of them, and they're going to get in trouble? I shouldn't, because it affected me and I'm injured today. And so if that had anything to do with it, and now I'm like, I used to like these guys when they played in SMU, but not a fan anymore, and they need to make better decisions and this and this and this. And that would be the way I would go with it. Like, you know, that whole never meet your heroes type of thing, right? Because they might disappoint you. And this would be not meeting your heroes, but it'd be meeting people that you have supported and have been a fan of. And now this happens, and it's like, oh, well, they're not who I thought they were. And now my mind has changed.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not trying to grant leniency in my personal life if it's going to affect my personal life. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, if it's going to affect actually how I live,
mm-hmm.
why am I going to be like, nah, you get a pass because you play for the Chiefs?
Right. Right. There's breaking news coming out, and I will get to it here in just a quick second. I want to stay on point. I don't want this person who hijacked America to hijack this show because of something happened to him today. And that might sound cold once I explain the news, but the WNBA just announced that 36 of the Indiana Fever's 40 regular season games will be on national television. That includes 10 games on ABC, ESPN, ESPN2, and CBS, as well as additional games on Amazon Prime Video and NBA TV. You may say, what's the big deal about the Indiana Fever? Well, they have the number one pick in the WNBA draft. Caitlin Clark has declared for the WNBA draft. She's not coming back to college. So everybody apparently assumes that the Indiana Fever, who haven't even drafted yet, are going to take Caitlin Clark with the first overall pick. Wouldn't it be quite the curveball and the funny thing and pulling the wool over everybody's eyes if they drafted Angel Reese or somebody different?
Be a heck of a redirect.
That would be. But I said the other day, and you agreed with me, that the Indiana Fever, even if Caitlin Clark isn't the right fit for their team, would be stupid not to draft her because they'll make a ton of money because they'll sell out. And there'll be, and now it's built up so much, people will be so disappointed they didn't draft Caitlin Clark. This is the Caitlin Clark effect, and it is real. And it's what Don Staley said the other day. We've actually talked about it weeks ago, that Caitlin Clark will lift up the WNBA. The WNBA's ratings will go up probably significantly immediately, in particular games that she's playing in. Okay? She's going to take that Caitlin Clark effect, and she's going to move it from college at Iowa to the WNBA. That is terrific, the WNBA. But she ain't coming back to Iowa, except to visit. So what happens at college women's basketball when the Caitlin Clark effect is over? And it is, pretty much now.
Mm-hmm.
We will find out next year. You and I have talked about that, but she already is having a gigantic impact on WNBA, and she hasn't even been drafted yet. That's GOAT.
Yeah.
She's a GOAT for WNBA, and she hadn't played a game.
It all, every part of it makes sense.
Sure.
For the Indiana Fever, like, they're in a perfect position. They just drafted a big last year, first pick in Aaliyah Boston, and now they get the best guard from college basketball to come to their team, right? And Caitlin Clark.
In a basketball kind of mecca of the Midwest in
exactly,
the country.
And it's
in Indiana.
And it's, you know, Indiana, Iowa, obviously similar type states, and they're in the same spot in the country basically, and so, you know, it's a fit for Caitlin Clark too, right? Because she's been used to that area, and it's not a big market, and she could thrive in that. And yeah, the Fever are sitting in a perfect spot. Whether they've told anybody what they're doing or not, it's pretty obvious where they're at and what they need to do.
It's pretty obvious what they should do,
and it's pretty obvious to everybody else that that's what they're going to do.
Yes.
And one of the most shocking things to ever happen in the history of not just sports, but everything.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason that it doesn't happen. Unless Caitlin Clark's like, nah, I'm not going to play. Just changes her mind. Doesn't even go back to college. Just says, I'm not going to play.
I'm tired
anymore.
Of all the pressure. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. Wow. The 2024 Masters has arrived. Well, almost. Inclement weather has delayed the proceedings for today. They just teed off at 9:30 this morning, pushed the tee times in the afternoon and potentially part of round one into a second day. Regardless of when the tournament begins, the other 88 men in the field will be chasing Scottie Scheffler. Scheffler is a 4-1 favorite, playing by far the best golf in the world, looking for a second green jacket in the last 3 years. Scheffler playing so well right now, he's lost to just one golfer in the last three tournaments. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Those who could push Scheffler, of course, you got the normal guys, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson will be playing. Maybe Tiger could, you know, somehow do something crazy, make the cut and do something. Xander Schlafly. Just a handful of guys that some people think have a chance maybe to knock off Scheffler. Listen, in golf, I always take the field, unless it was Tiger Woods in his prime. And I would still take the field, no matter how good Scottie Scheffler is. And I may lose money if I did that. But I don't bet. I just say these things on the radio. So you can bet and lose your money. That's your choice, not mine. 1,500 private jets will arrive at the Masters this week. 1,500 private jets. I saw a picture and video of them all lined up at an airport. You don't think people are richer than you know what? Yeah. Okay, here's the big breaking news. It just came out via ESPN. I got the notification. I had a couple people text me right after I received this notification from ESPN. O.J. Simpson, whose life as American sports hero quickly turned when he was charged with the 1994 murder of his wife and her friend, O.J. Simpson has died at the age of 76. He died yesterday. His family has announced it on social media. Their statement on social media, on April 12th, our father, Arenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. During this time of transition, his family asked that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. The family posted on Simpson's Twitter account or X account. Simpson's attorney also confirmed his death to TMZ. Simpson ultimately was acquitted of stabbing to death Nicole Brown Simpson and her friend Ronald Goldman in Los Angeles in one of the most sensational trials of the 20th century. But his life was forever changed. He went from a sports idol to a celebrity in exile before being sentenced to 33 years in prison for a bungled 2007 Las Vegas hotel robbery. On the football team field, Simpson was one of the game's all-time great running backs. He was USC's second Heisman Trophy winner in 1968, earned the most first-place votes in the award's history. That season, he established a then NCAA single-season rushing record with over 1,700 yards rushing, helped guide the Trojans to a Rose Bowl appearance where they lost to top-ranked Ohio State. In his two seasons at USC, Simpson was twice the unanimous All-American, equaled or better 19 NCAA conference and school records. 1969, the Buffalo Bills made O.J. the number one pick in NFL draft. Juice, as he was nicknamed, went on to make five first-team All-Pro squads, six Pro Bowls, named MVP in 1973, when he became the first NFL player to rush for over 2,000 yards in a season, did it in just 14 games, which average per game is still an NFL record, but the overall 2,000 yards is not anymore. That's Dickerson, or is Peterson or Dickerson have that? Dickerson saw that?
Peterson, I believe, yeah.
Peterson, you have to look that up. Simpson spent nine, because Dickerson ran for 2,105, didn't he? I don't know.
And maybe he didn't. Maybe Peterson didn't pass it. He's probably just the last one that got to 2,000.
I think Dickerson still has it. Simpson spent 9 years with the Bills before wrapping up his career two seasons with the Niners. He was inducted into Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1985. But in 1990, and of course, he was a commentator on Monday Night Football. He was in the Naked Gun trilogy, which I thought was funny, and his role was funny. What was it, Nuremberg or whatever his name was, the character he played. But then in 1994, his life changed forever. On June 12th, the bodies of Brown Simpson and Goldman were found outside her condo in the Brentwood area of L.A. Simpson was a person of interest in the murders, but rather than turn himself in 5 days later, he led police on a low-speed chase throughout L.A. as a passenger in a white Ford Bronco driven by former NFL player Al Collins. An estimated TV audience of 95 million watched the drama unfold, with live coverage preempting regular programming, including the NBA Finals. Simpson eventually surrendered to police at his Brentwood home that night. His criminal trial began in January of 95 and was labeled the trial of the century. On October 3rd, the jury found Simpson not guilty of either murder. Simpson's legal woes, however, were hardly over. In 1997, the Goldman family filed a civil lawsuit against Simpson. The jury found him liable for $33.5 million. To help settle court costs, Simpson auctioned off his own copy of the Heisman Trophy. Simpson eventually moved from California to Florida. And then after 13 years, after his double murder trial resulted in a non-guilty verdict, Simpson went to trial again, this time in Las Vegas, after he and another man, Clarence Stewart, robbed two sports memorabilia dealers at gunpoint after breaking into their hotel room. Simpson told police that the memorabilia had been stolen from him and he was trying to reclaim it. He was convicted of 12 counts of armed robbery and kidnapping and sentenced to 33 years in prison. Simpson served his sentence at Lovelock, Nevada. He was released on parole in October 2017, was deemed a completely free man after being discharged from parole in 2021, and so forth and so on. And he had other issues with the law, drunk driving, so forth and so on. I'm just going to say this. It's going to sound bad, but I think a lot of people that are going to be listening to what I say are probably going to agree with me. See you later.
A lot of people are going to agree with that, I hope.
Usually when somebody dies, you feel bad.
Yeah.
I you know, it's hard to because of a couple things. One, he was acquitted, so he was not found guilty of that, but then did other bad things and holding somebody gunpoint for crying out loud, and then finally got his prison time, which he should have probably had before that. He able to get, you know, the prosecution bungled that case. I think there's no doubt about it with OJ. But I always love how, it sounds weird to say this, but I always really was, I thought it was comical when OJ, after he was acquitted, you know, he talked about, at some point he talked about really trying to find the true killers.
Yeah.
OJ never tried to find anybody. I mean, he was so distraught about the whole thing after he was acquitted. You know, if you were not guilty, and that was your wife and your ex-wife, mother to your children of yours, and a friend of yours, as you claimed, as he claimed, if you were not guilty, and then once you were acquitted, you'd be relieved because, you know what, you were a wronged man. And then I think you would be out trying to turn over every single rock and use your resources to find the real killer. Yeah. OJ never did that, which tells me all I need to know. The guy knew who the killer was. It was him. Now, all of us out here are going to be, some people would be like, well, technically he was acquitted and the justice system ran its course. Yeah, okay. But this one, there are other situations in the country where people have been acquitted or not guilty and they're guilty of sin, but they had better defense lawyers, more money to throw at the problem, and they too don't go trying to find anybody that killed somebody in their life because they know they're the ones that did it. But I was like, that's all the thing I need. That, to me, proves his guilt. He never tried to try to find anybody. Why? Because he knew he'd be wasting money. Why would he waste money and time when he already knows what happened? So, listen, I know he was acquitted. I think he's guilty as hell. I think a lot of people in the country think he was guilty as hell. And now some people would argue he's going to hell forever as he's passed away. So, does that sound callous? I know he's a human being, but after whatever he did, allegedly, and then did after that, and didn't learn from any mistakes that he got. He must have thought he'd get away with anything. I'm sorry, but I don't think. I mean, I feel for his family who loved him. You know, you lose your dad.
Absolutely.
I feel for his family.
Yeah.
I feel for his family, and there'll be a lot of people out there wouldn't even feel that. But there are a lot of people out there right now just saying, "See you later, good riddance."
Yeah, anybody that like has,
I guarantee
stood
you, the
by
Simpson, the Nicole Brown Simpsons family,
yeah,
the Goldmans are all like,
are definitely,
yeah. There's, you know, a place in hell for that
Goldmans
guy.
For sure.
They're going, like, there's a place in hell for that guy.
So yeah, they're probably doing the same thing everybody was doing back in the '90s when they were for OJ, right? They're dancing on the tables and excited about what happened. There's two things in the '90s that I have enthralled myself in as a kid that grew up in the '90s, and one of them's Waco, and the other one is OJ Simpson. I can't even tell you how many books and documentaries and everything that I've brought in about the OJ case and all that. I mean, I have the Faye Resnick book that she wrote about Nicole Brown. Like, I've read so much stuff about it. And I have Christopher Darden's book. And I'm going to tell you right now, all that I've read and all that I've done with it, when Christopher Darden asked him to put on them gloves, that's when they lost the case.
Yep. Yep.
And if the glove don't fit, you must have quit. Now we're going in with that, with Johnny Cochran. So that's where it was lost. But if you have actually consumed as much as I have about it, there's no doubt in my mind that he did it. Like, and there's no doubt in a lot of people's mind that he did it that haven't consumed what I've consumed.
The defense knew he did.
But you watch the documentary. They like, was it a? I think it was a three-part documentary or four.
Oh, it was a long thing. Yeah.
And the first part of it was basically about his football career, mm-hmm. and then they got into the other stuff, and there was some graphic stuff in the second two episodes. I'm going to tell you that right now. But yeah, Carl Douglas is in there, like, he's just being just arrogant and stuff, and just you can tell in the like deep in his mind, like he doesn't even believe what he's saying.
Exactly.
He's just like, well, justice system did its job. That's all, you know. Yeah. It's like just stuff like that. They're like, hey, we did the process, and this is what happened.
Do you believe OJ was guilty? Well, the justice system did. Yeah. Well, you didn't answer the question, did you?
It's just like, and then, but then you see the other side of it and how it affected like Marsha Clark and Chris Darden and this guy, you know, his whole life. He was a young up and comer, and his whole life was changed because of it. And not to say he wouldn't have been a good attorney, you know, if he would have been able to keep doing what he was doing. But this thing changed the entire country. And, and a lot of things that were going on with, you know, obviously with the race riots and things like that that were going on back then. It was so, it's so wild to get enthralled in it and to see it, because I was only 11 when it happened. So I wasn't, I was just mad that they interrupted my NBA
finals. That's what I was mad. I was like, quit showing a slow moving Bronco.
I don't care about this Bronco. It's not even a chase. They're just driving down the dang highway. And what are we doing here? I'm trying to watch the Knicks and Rockets play a basketball game here.
I had two thoughts. I was like, one, give me back the NBA game, or two, please drive faster.
Yeah,
make
exactly.
this exciting to watch.
Because
this is
some
boring.
Kind of excitement.
Yeah. We were all enthralled with it, right? Like, oh, OJ might kill himself inside the Bronco.
Yeah, and seeing that's the part that I wasn't even really processing at that age. And you obviously were,
but I was 18,
and the people like you were, and the adults and at that time, and it's
that was
just,
30 years ago.
Yeah, it's wild to go back to see that.
Yeah,
which, by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, I was down at the transmitter site yesterday. Today's 30 years that Katy Country 94
today
on the air.
I knew it, 1994.
June 11th, 1994.
Or,
I mean, April 11th, 1994.
Say, that
I mean,
don't make sense.
Okay. June 11th. I'm thinking of OJ in June.
Yep, right.
April 11th, 94. Yep.
So this is our 30 years Katy Country's.
I meant to text you that one. Just, you know, we had the kids here yesterday,
right.
And so I took them down just to look at the transmitters,
right.
too, because that was a recommendation.
Right.
And that it's etched down there in the thing, and it said, when they laid that concrete, it was April 16th, and then I looked back over to the other side at April 11th on air.
I knew it was 94,
but
I didn't think about what exact date.
And I wouldn't have even
so
thought
today,
about it.
Well,
I actually saw it on my Facebook memory, so I would have thought about
and
it.
And yet again, OJ ruins another thing. It ruins our 30-year anniversary.
He's trying to upstage everybody.
Dear Lord. So... well, hey, happy birthday to us,
Katy
Country 94, 30 years young.
I forgot about it already until you just said it's been 30 years since the OJ thing.
That is, and we're doing some really cool promotions. We're giving away a brand new private plane to go to the Masters. You didn't get entered? Oh, it's too bad. You missed that promo.
Well, I guess it's too late. The Masters are starting.
Here's how cheap we are. First person that calls in, we give you 30 cents. A penny for every year that we've been on the air. You know, it's a gift that keeps on giving. You can say you won something.
Yeah.
I even go crazy. I'll give you $3 to represent. Not 30's too much. We can't afford that.
Yeah.
Can't do it. You know, cost of stamps and everything else has gone up. We cannot do this. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, great. If we had a promotions department or, say, more than two people on staff, we could have done something fun
with
that.
Yeah, exactly.
But you and I have a few other things we've been trying to take care of.
There's a lot of things going on right now. And yeah, it's two people here.
Yeah, just two.
I just saw while I'm talking about April 11th, it's also my mom and dad's 54th anniversary today. So happy anniversary to
them. Dear Lord, April 11th is unbelievable.
No, for me, it is. It's a crazy day because my grandpa was actually born on April 11th. My parents got married on the day that he was born. It's actually my Uncle Jim, who just recently passed away. It's his birthday today, too, is April 11th. So there's a lot of people in my family that this date, and including myself as being an employee here, that this date has a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, right? It does. Wow, that's pretty awesome. What a day. What a day. April 11th, very important. I know the station and the Dusty, and it's also technically OJ passed away yesterday, so we don't have to share
that
date with him, so that's good.
That's very good.
Dodge the bullet there. No pun intended. Let's see here. So OJ Simpson ran for 2,003 yards in 14 games in 1973 at the Buffaloes. He was the first NFL running back to rush for over 2,000 yards. Since then, Chris Johnson ran for 2,006 and 2009 with Tennessee. Terrell Davis ran for 2,008 yards in 98 with Denver. They won the Super Bowl that year. Derrick Henry ran for 2,027 yards just a few years ago for Tennessee. Barry Sanders ran for 2,053 yards for Detroit in 1997. Jamal Lewis ran for 2,066 yards in 2003 for Baltimore. And here's the part. Adrian Peterson ran for 2,097 yards with the Vikings in 2012. He was 8 yards away from tying it.
Yeah.
9 to break it.
And they pulled him out of the game.
I believe so.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I want to think that like the coach didn't even really know about it.
I think that's true.
And and took him out. I could be wrong about that. I just feel like
it seems like after the game there were questions like why didn't you let him in?
Yeah, just let him run for.
Yeah. Eric Dickerson ran for 2,105 in 1984. I would have been 8, and I remember it's one of my first memories of NFL football.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs being bad, and
Chiefs were bad.
They were
in the
bad
80s.
Then. Yeah, they were. And Eric Dickerson with the goggles and everything running for 2,105 yards. Of course, he was there at SMU. Ties back in SMU and Rashee Rice. He was SMU alum, and of course they had the death penalty after he left that program. Mm-hmm. And Eric Dickerson, I also remember him most definitely, Al, when he was a 1-year sideline reporter for Monday Night Football, and he was the worst of all time. Most definitely, Al. Most definitely, Al. Most definitely, Al. By the way, speaking of bad commentating, if you don't know, NFHS, when you get the state competition, we can't stream anymore. So my son, of course, played on the Bullet Boys basketball team, and I did the radio broadcast, so I have access to all of that, clearly, the audio broadcast. But we couldn't stream. We streamed all year long, every game, except when we got to, well, I guess Hoisington, we weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
But state, you can't. Now, in the future, that may change. But at state, I didn't know what the I knew the announcer was doing the game on the NFHS network for state, and so then somebody posts a highlight Eli Johnson 75-foot heave at the end of the first quarter against Wellsville, and the announcer was absolutely on top of it, called him Jackson Cheney. Whoops.
Yeah.
So then I was like, do I even want copies of this if the names are wrong and this and that? I'm like, well, you know, it's my son. It might be the only time our kids ever go to state, and got way more coverage than we would ever had when we were younger. There was no video streaming or TV coverage of state. Of course, we were bad enough at Waukenny. We didn't make state, so it wasn't a problem. So I was like, you know what? And then my youngest son got sick, so he had to stay home. A friend stayed home with him the day of the state semifinals, so he couldn't go to Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. So very reluctantly, we paid $11.99. Okay, for a subscription for NFHS so that my youngest could watch his oldest brother mm-hmm. play in the state semifinals, okay? So we paid the $11.99. Now, once you have a subscription, just like a lot of other stuff, you can get a copy of video stream broadcast like we do for the Bullet Trojan Channel. Do the same thing with NFHS. It's like $20 a shot. And you're stuck with the announcer that did the game, and you've got the camera footage and everything else. And I'd say the camera footage wasn't bad. It's improved.
Yeah.
And the announcer's a very good guy. And so, but he had to do a ton of games and this and that. And so my son hit the very first three of the tournament. He hit the very first shot of the tournament. On the very first possession, my son hit a three against Topeka Hayden, and the announcer was on top of it from the very beginning and called him Quinn Eilert. And they don't look anywhere close.
No.
Okay, my son's way better looking than Quinn. I'm kidding. That's a joke. That's a joke. That's a joke. That's a joke. So I was kind of like, well, do I want to pay $20 per game if this is the way it was a lot? And so I'm like, you know, it is a one-time thing. I was very reluctant to spend the money, but I did it. So I spent – see, I'm so mad I'm in the microphone stand. I'm so distraught. That and OJ died. So 60 yeah. – I'm not distraught about that. So $60 is what I spent for three copies, one copy of each of the state tournament games. Of course, I don't know why I kept the middle one. That was a bad, tough one to watch. But so anyway, I got the three copies, and I went back and I watched not every single second, but I watched bits and pieces. And you know, it's kind of cool to have them zoom in on whatever kid's at the foul line, and there's my son. Years from now, he's going to appreciate it. I have copies of that, and he can look at it, so forth and so on. So where am I going with the store, you may ask? So $11.99 is what my wife set this up. Now, I'm going to throw my wife under the bus for a quick second. Don't tell her I did this, okay? It'll be your and my little secret, ladies and gentlemen. Don't tell my wife if you know her that I'm doing this, okay? Please, do me a solid. What is that? There's consequences to your actions, and now I'm about to do something I shouldn't. So I'm very, very organized. Dusty knows this. I'm very, very detailed. It's a big reason why I've been successful in things that I do. I'm very organized. Dusty is too. I think that's a big reason why the best play-by-play guys are the most organized ones. I think you can tell. And I think, obviously, when you hear Dusty, you know this. He's prepared. He's ready to go. You know I've prepared. And we got lots of details. Like, I don't know how you remember this stuff. I'm like, we don't remember all of it. Someone's right in front of us, and we read it. That are our notes. Or we have it memorized. But we do that to prepare to give the best possible broadcast. And so I'm, you know, going to state, driving to state in Hutch, and my wife was with me, but she earlier in the morning, because I came over to work, and then I went to Hutch that day for the state semifinals, and my wife said, hey, you know, are you okay if I subscribe to NFHS? She knows how much I despise it. NFHS. I got something tied with the letter F. But anyway, she said, you're okay if I subscribe to this so your youngest can watch it? I said, absolutely, so he can watch it. It's $11.99. Well, when you subscribe to something, you need to remind yourself to cancel so you don't get charged again. So last night, I happened to look at our credit card statement. I was just looking to see how much we owed on my app, right? And I'm going through, every once in a while, I check, make sure there's no fraudulent charges, things like that. That's something everybody probably should do. I scroll down, I'm like, son of a bleep. We just got charged $11.99 for NFHS, and we're not even watching anything. I already got copies of it. So I go to my wife, and I say, did you not cancel that? Oh. Well, I had my calendar on my phone. That's weird. It didn't alert me. I said, fire your phone. So now I got to pay $12 more to an organization that I don't really care too much about. But it gave me this glorious part. So my wife is sitting on the couch last night, and she says, well, you could go back and watch the state volleyball stuff, or maybe you could sync your voice with the state volleyball stuff. I said, honey, there's a lot of stuff going on in our lives right now. That's really going to be difficult to do. And people that are Beloit fans probably already got a copy of the actual video coverage at state. And so I said, yeah, probably not going to have time to get to that. I said, but since we still have access for another 30 days because we already paid the... So you cancel the subscription, but you're not going to get your money back. No. You get 30 days of free access that you don't need. But I'm like, ah, what the hell? So last night, I go pull up the state volleyball video stream coverage at state just to see how good, or as I was thinking, bad it would be. The footage is fine. The footage is way better than it used to be. The production company that does it, KCMC or whatever, out of Greensburg or whatever, they do a really good job. And, you know, granted, they've got young high school kids doing the announcing, which to me should be, you should have really good people doing state tournament stuff. But hey, that's just me. Talk to Keisha about that one. But so the kid is announcing state volleyball. I have not heard this. The Beloit people have known this for 6 months. I just discovered it last night because my wife forgot to cancel a $12 subscription. Did I mention that my wife forgot to cancel an $11.99 subscription? We're $12 poorer. But anywho, it gave me this glorious observation. And it became something so funny that my youngest, me and my wife, laughed hysterically. So we're watching the video of Beloit playing Heritage Christian, Goodland, Smoky Valley, pool play, and I'm sprinkling through and I'm fast forwarding. And the kid that's doing it, God bless his soul, man. You know, he's raw. You can tell. He's like, this is how he called the game. You ready for a volleyball match? Oh, wow. Incredible play by Brown. That was incredible. So I fast forward like an hour. First thing I hear, what an incredible play. So then I fast forward, I get to the Heritage Christian match. I'm like, I wonder how he called the final point when Beloit beat Heritage Christian. Mm-hmm. And Beloit was going nuts. The place is going nuts because this guy's energy never changed. He was a robot. He sounded like a robot. I was like, well, maybe his energy changed when Beloit won an exciting three-set match against the defending champion Heritage Christian in the pool play. So I fast forward. It's 24-23. It's match point. Ball hits the antenna. So Beloit gets the point. They start celebrating. He doesn't even mention anything about hitting the antenna. And this is what he says. Oh, my. Wow. Incredible. And he says the same things over and over. And we are laughing hysterically. My wife and I and my youngest is just loving this. I'm going to tell you right now. No offense. This is going to sound bad. I know they're learning. But that's not the time to be learning. Play-by-play at a state tournament, in my opinion. Okay. But my 10-year-old would have had more energy and reflection covering the game and would have known the players better, too, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there going, well, I guess that's one good thing that we wasted $12 on was I got to enjoy a great laugh and almost cried because it was so robotic and so funny. I kid you not. I fast forward an hour, 30 minutes. Incredible. Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a play. Incredible. Like, do you have any other vocab words? Do they teach that in school? I know. I'm being tough on whoever the kid was. I'm having some fun with it. But like I said, that kid shouldn't be put in that position to start with. But that's something I got out of the $12. I don't know if it was worth $12 for me to laugh like that, but
hey,
I spent
laughter,
it. My wife
can't put a price on laughter, man.
Man, no. Apparently, yeah, you can. $11.99.
Put $11.99, yeah.
$11.99.
Or you can't cap the price.
Oh, okay. I should have paid more. Thank God I canceled last night. It would have been another couple months before I would have noticed it. Speaking of money, John Calipari can afford $11.99. John Calipari and Arkansas Athletic Director Hunter Yurachek were adamant yesterday that the former CEO of Tyson Foods played a vital role in landing John Calipari to replace Eric Musselman, who left after five seasons to take the USC job. According to Calipari, Tyson asked if Calipari would meet with Arkansas Athletic Director Yurachek last week. Both happened to be in the Phoenix area for the Final Four. Calipari agreed, insinuating that he assumed Yurachek might want his opinion on candidates to replace Musselman. Calipari said, "Whatever John Tyson would ask me to do, I'm doing it." So apparently, if he wants you to kill somebody, he'll do that too. The meeting lasted less than 90 minutes. Yurachek, the Arkansas AD, said Calipari spent 15 to 20 minutes bragging about how great the Arkansas job was. And Yurachek, the Arkansas AD, eventually asked, "Why not you?" Calipari said, "Why not me?" Yurachek shot back, "Yeah, why not you?" After talking to Yurachek, Calipari said he went west while mulling the possibility of leaving Kentucky for Arkansas. On his trip, Calipari said he spoke with a Catholic priest about the decision. "Father, I've got to decide what I'm going to do here," Calipari said. "One is Arkansas, the other is Kentucky." The priest told him to go for an hour walk and have it in his mind that he was the Arkansas coach. Then, on the way back, Calipari should imagine he was a Kentucky coach. "You'll see what moves your heart and what you want to do." Calipari obliged and set out on a walk that rocked college basketball. Calipari said, "I'll be honest, when I thought about coming here to Arkansas and building this program and making it something special, it got me excited." Calipari said he planned to keep his talks with Arkansas under wraps until after Monday night's national title game, but word broke Sunday that a deal was in the works. It was officially announced yesterday as a five-year agreement worth $38 million before potential bonuses. The average salary, in excess of $7 million, falls short of what Calipari made at Kentucky, but is roughly $3 million per year more than what the Razorbacks paid Eric Musselman. Do you believe that story? Because it's in a story. Do you believe that? Because it almost seems to be too...
I believe
too,
that he said all that, but yeah, I don't know, believe right. that's what moved
that
him.
It sounds like a story Calipari, like, you know, a priest, a rabbi, and such and such walk into a bar.
Yeah, it's like, as you're starting it, it's like, what's the joke here?
Yes, right. Yeah. Right. That's how I thought when I was reading it. Yeah. But here's the thing. Calipari, a lot of people are like, well, he's an idiot. He's crazy to take less money. He's taking a huge pay cut. He's going from, like, what was it? Was it making $10 million a year at Kentucky? Something like that. So he's taking a pay cut, but he's still going to make $7 million a year. And then there's going to be, and then here's the thing. If he makes the tournament, he gets an automatic 2-year rollover to make the tournament. Mm-hmm. It's not about winning a championship. So, like I said, the expectation's a little bit lower at Arkansas. But this goes back to what we talked about before. People think that in order to be happy, you have to make the most money of anybody. John Calipari is not a stupid person. He has made plenty of money. I guarantee he's saved it. He's put it away for kids, grandkids. He's got, you know, he's got mansions, houses, whatever. He can maybe dies. That'll go to his family. He's fine. His family's fine financially. And he's still going to get paid $7 million a year. It's not like he's doing it for free to go to Arkansas. And if he's very successful, guess what? He'll get a raise. He'll get even more. So, is he taking less money per year to go to Arkansas? Does Kentucky to Arkansas seem like a step down? Yes. But ask yourself this one thing. And I am not a big John Calipari fan, but I respect what he's done. And I will say, it sinks into me when I see all these Kentucky players in the NBA talking about Calipari and how their allegiance now is going straight to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you that's how big of an impact John Calipari has had on the players. And John Calipari, there's a couple stories that have been shared by some people about how he has really stepped up when there was the tornado. They had the shooting in Pittsburgh, remember that? He came and they helped try to mourn, and he was there. A rabbi shared this, and he was at a service, and he did everything to try to help the community and heal, because he's from Pittsburgh originally, I guess. And they talk about all the stuff they did for the tornado victims here not too long ago down in that area. John Calipari does a lot of things you may not be aware of, and I was not aware of that either. A lot of people think John Calipari is a cheater. Well, he doesn't have to cheat anymore because it's legal. He might have been doing it ahead. Mm-hmm. He usually is ahead of the curve, honestly, when it comes to recruiting, the one and done, and probably was ahead of the curve when he got Derrick Rose to come to Memphis and so forth and so on. And now it's pretty much legal, and it makes total sense that he's going to a place where they're going to load up on the NIL collective and money. So now it's just out in the open. We can go buy players. Now we don't have to hide and make it a secret anymore. Some people would argue, hey, Kansas doesn't do that anymore either. And Duke and others. But he knew at Kentucky, first of all, the situation, you have to ask yourself, how miserable did the situation get to leave a blue blood, perhaps the best job in the country, in college basketball? Mm-hmm. After 15 years and the success he had 4 or 5 Final Fours, he had 1 national championship, yes, probably should have won more than one, could have made more Final Fours, but think about the NBA talent he churned out. People got their money's worth when they went to a Kentucky game. DeMarcus Cousins said yesterday, he said, Arkansas just got the number one coach in America, his opinion. And he said they're going to have the number one recruiting class in America. You watch. And he said, and now all the celebrities are going to Arkansas instead of Kentucky. He said, Kentucky, you don't know what you had. And they're going to find out, depending on who they get. And maybe they get somebody that's better than John Calipari. Maybe they get somebody that's worse. Don't know. But you don't, you know, be careful what you wish for. But Calipari, the situation becomes so untenable that even though he's making a ton of money, more so than where he's going now, that the boosters, some of them have turned on him.
Unreal buyout if he gets fired in the next 2, 3, 4 years.
$34 million. Yeah. $34 million was what it was, or $32 million. So, and he could have forced himself to get fired probably and collected that money, and then boom, would it right there with Arkansas. He didn't do that. He could have. He didn't. And I don't think he was expecting this opportunity to turn in the way it did. I mean, it is funny how the AD actually had the guts to ask him. You know, there's a
thing. I believe that part of the story for sure.
I do too. I do too, because how many times, and I try to tell my kids this, and I don't know if it sinks in, and I think a lot of people out there that are timid, people that are scared for no reason, in my opinion, I've always said, don't be scared to ask questions. There is a saying, there's no such thing as a dumb question. I disagree. There are dumb questions. However, don't be afraid to ask a question. Now, I know when you're a young person, you're maybe a little bit scared to ask the pretty girl to the prom, or you're scared to ask the popular boy to the prom or whatever, or to date or go on a date, or in your college, you're a little bit scared. You know what happened when I got to college? It kind of hit me finally. I was like, what's the worst thing that can happen? They say no. What? My pride has hurt so much because she said no. Guess what? In your life, you're going to be told no a lot.
Yeah.
So I got to the point where, and it's not like I went down the street and asked every girl to go out with me, but there's a couple gals I asked to go out with me. And you know, a couple times, I think one time I was turned down. I only asked 2 times, but I hit 50-50, not bad. And one went out, didn't work out so well, and it just wasn't cohesive enough or whatever, didn't have a lot of things in common, but hey, I asked, you know, and she went out with me. And then another time I asked, and she said no, and I didn't lose any sleep over it. But there's so many people that are scared to ask a question. And how many athletic directors would have been scared to be embarrassed to ask Calipari, well, would you want to come here? I think there would be.
Some laugh in your face.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I think there'd be ADs.
It'd be the worst no you ever get.
You know, listen, you know, there'd be people like Bob Huggins wants to get back into coaching. Okay. So I say Stetson, well, let's just say Kansas Wesleyan University. Okay. We'll just use a local one. Bethany College. They reach out to Bob Huggins and said, hey, we'd love to have you come here. And you'd be like, well, that's the dumbest thing you ever would ask. You'll never come here. You don't know unless you ask. Odds are he won't. But what did you lose by asking? You lost nothing by asking or kicking the tires on it. Just like you didn't lose anything by asking the pretty girl to the prom and she said no. And guess what? There's more than one pretty girl. And they don't have to be pretty. Girls don't have to be pretty. They can be cute. They can be pretty. They can be great people with tremendous personalities who are smarter than you are. And you might turn out to be smart that you dated her because she's going to carry your ass the rest of your life. Because she's going to be like a million. She's going to be a millionaire because she's so smart. And you're going to be, you know, taking care of the kids at home. So don't sit here and act so prideful that you can't ask a question and you're so scared of the answer. This athletic director, probably when he asked it, was like, eh, what the hell? Why not you, John? All of a sudden, John was like, I really didn't think about that. And the AD's like, oh my God, he didn't say no right away. I've got a chance. See, that's how, like, it's like the something about Mary.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, she goes, well, when he tries to ask her out the prom, What was his character's name? Ben Stiller played the character. I forgot the name of the character.
Long since I've seen it. I've seen it a lot, but it all the things in between it.
So he asked the girl, she goes, well, I don't know. I might have something, and I have something, and I have something, and I have something. He goes, well, I'll take that as a maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not a no. So he had a glimmer of hope that somehow this girl would go out with him in that movie. You don't know unless you ask. Imagine where college basketball would be right now today if the Arkansas athletic director didn't ask John Calipari, well, what about you? Calipari hadn't even thought about it.
Yep.
But Calipari was not happy at Kentucky. People aren't happy with him after losing to Oakland and being an early exit again. And Kentucky fans have maybe unrealistic expectations. Maybe they are realistic. I don't know. But he was all of a sudden, it just dawned on him, it sounds like, in this conversation, that when the AD said, well, you just talked glowingly about this being a great job, why don't you take it? And the next thing you know, Calipari's like, well, hell, that's actually a good idea. You know what? I'm not happy where I'm at. And that kickstarted the conversations as to, well, what could you give me? What is in my deal? What can you bring to the table? Because I want to win. And so he's going to take a pay cut, but he's going to be happier. And he's going to stay in the SEC. And, you know, listen, he's not going to say it outwardly, but I'll bet you there's a part of him going, I want to stick it to Kentucky and those boosters and alums that second-guess me. And can you imagine if John Calipari in the next 5 years wins a national championship in Arkansas, wins as many titles in Arkansas as he does in Kentucky, or maybe more? Wouldn't that be something? Kentucky fans be sitting there going, and they hire a coach that ain't that great, and they go back to Billy Gillespie days? Can you imagine? And there'll be a lot of Kentucky fans that come out of the woodwork saying, I told you we shouldn't got rid of the guy. I know he had disappointing tournaments, but dear Lord, he's still a great coach. You don't know unless you ask. So if this athletic director didn't ask, we wouldn't have what's rocking college basketball today. John Calipari, this is how the coaching carousel works, ladies and gentlemen. This is how it's a trickle-down effect. If you ever played dominoes, you know how it trickles down, right? You hit the first domino. Here's where you're at today. Kentucky has an opening.
I can save you time on part of this.
What happened? We got breaking news?
We always complain about
stuff. I went long enough so we could get it.
Stuff always breaks after the show.
Okay.
Scott Drew has passed on Kentucky.
Okay, damn.
I knew where you were going because you talked about it earlier, right? Because you talked about how, when you were leading into the show, like how this could affect K-State, right?
God dang it, O.J. Simpson and NFHS, you ruined my upcoming part.
And actually, I saw the tweet literally the same time you said there's breaking news about O.J. Simpson. So that's right when it came out, was the same time as you saw O.J.
It's funny. I didn't think Scott Drew was going to take the job.
I didn't either.
But I had this all lined up.
Yeah, it's all ready to go. You did the research. It's put in front of you. And you want to tell K-State fans Jerome Tang's leaving. Get ready for it.
My whole spiel was an athletic director had the guts to ask a question that nobody else would ask, and now K-State may lose their coach because of it, and I can't even use that anymore. I could have went on with it, and people might not have seen the story. You could have let me have my fun, Dusty, but no, you had to rob me of that.
Well, but then...
Thank God I paid $11.99 to watch some funny thing last night.
After the show's over, you were like, we spent all that time talking about this,
and I know.
Not even going.
I know. How many times, just a little behind-the-scenes situation here. How many times on this show, trust me, it's many times, where we get off the air, and some breaking news pops up 10 minutes after off the show.
Yeah.
Like, God, we could have talked about that. So today, at least OJ, the news came out he died.
Yeah.
So we could at least talk about that today. And we're on long enough, thanks to my wife not canceling a subscription. So thank you, dear, to ruining what I had all planned at the end of the show. And that was, K-State fans, Scott Drew goes to Kentucky, Jerome Tang goes to Baylor, what are you going to do? All because an athletic director said, hey, why not you, Calipari?
Absolutely.
But
it
could
have come down to that.
Now we flush it.
Yeah. It's that part of it's over.
Hold on a second. This just in. Jerome Tang's being considered for the Kentucky job. We'll just skip the middle, man.
We will just use that story for whoever actually does take the Kentucky job, that the athletic director asked the question, and now you've lost your coach because of it.
Listen.
And in a third roundabout way.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, Dang.
I didn't mean to squash it, but I was like, well, but, if we spend this time talking about it, it's going to be irrelevant by the time somebody might listen to the podcast later today, which I know people do.
And they may go, wow, these bunch of morons, they think they know something about sports. That's old. 10 minutes ago, they already decided.
Half hour ago, they already said that Scott Drew's not taking the job. What are you guys doing?
What are you talking about? Yeah. I'm like, hey, by the way, O.J. Simpson died. Did you hear that? We were all over that one. That came out like 1 minute after it came out. We were on that. So, yeah, I'm glad I didn't have some big plan to talk about O.J. while he was alive today. Yeah, that would have messed up the show, too. Goodness gracious. What are you going to tell me next? The Masters is over? Okay. Well, I thought they were just starting today. But anywho, are the Royals lost today? Their winning streak's over. Great. Well, so much for that 7-game winning streak I predicted today.
Scheffler had to duck out of the tournament, man, I say.
Caitlin, just in. Caitlin Clark is not going to play in the WNBA. Son of a buck. We spent 10 minutes on the show talking about that. You never know what's going to happen. And if I stall long enough, maybe there's some more breaking news that we can bring
Kentucky up. Maybe Kentucky will hire a coach, and we can tell the story about the other school that's affected with it.
Yes. but I can tell you this. One of the main reasons why Scott Drew passed on Kentucky per source is that his family didn't want to leave Baylor and Waco. Drew has three kids, college and high school age, and they've grown up their entire lives in Waco. Listen, I get that. I truly get that. And that goes back to money isn't everything. Okay. If Scott Drew's happy where he is, and his employer's happy with him, and his kids don't want to leave, that's the key. That's the key. If he is happy and he is fulfilled and it doesn't need a big challenge of going to Kentucky, and this is where he is in his life, and who knows, maybe when his kids graduate high school, then that job Kentucky pops up again, he may take it then. You know, Roy Williams turned it down once, never thought it was going to come up again in North Carolina, and then it did, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes opportunities pop up more than once. But I respect Scott Drew for staying at Baylor and not taking the job. If it's something he really wanted, but everybody else's family's completely against, you know, it's a bummer for him professionally a little bit. But at the same time, he still makes good money. He enjoys what he does. If he's happy where he's at, and maybe he would like that challenge to go to Kentucky, and it sounds like he would. But listen, I'm going to tell you right now, you do not want to live in a house with an unhappy wife and a whole bunch of unhappy kids. That is not a good, happy life, no matter how much money you make and how much money you throw. Hey, each one of you get an in-ground pool. After a while, they get bored with that. What else, Dad? You can't buy my happiness.
Yeah.
So, or Scott Drew just becomes divorced, and he goes to Kentucky. And then he's disconnected with his kids, and he's happy. No, he would not be happy in that situation. So I give him a lot of credit. So now I guess the question is, who's the Kentucky apple of their eye?
It's interesting. It will be interesting.
Nate Oates said he's not.
That's what's funny about this, too, is like you're...
Jerome Tang might be the next Kentucky coach. Yeah. We'll just keep working our way down.
Listen, like you're talking about, you know, saying that somebody would say that Kentucky might be the best job in America, right? But some of the best coaches are saying, I don't want to go to Kentucky.
Well, do you want to follow a guy that had the success?
You have to follow it. Not only following it, but if you are on the outside looking in, this guy is a winner.
Yeah.
That's coaching the team right now, John Calipari. He's got a national championship on his credit, right?
Like, multiple Final Fours.
And he's won. He's lost, but he's won a lot of games with this team. There's been exits where, you know, obviously in the recent history, they're leaving the tournament a little quicker. They're not even making the tournament 1 year. But the track record proves that he has won at Kentucky. And that's the reaction that the boosters are having right now, basically wanting this guy out, wanting him fired. If I'm Scott Drew and looking at that, I'm like, what kind of pressure is going to be on me at Kentucky?
Yeah, oh yeah.
If the boosters are doing this to a guy that's won a national title, that is not – obviously winning a national title, but still putting together kids and teams and that are in the top 10, in the top 5 at one point during the season. You know, he's still doing all that, and they want him out. Scott Drew's at Baylor, where it was unreal for people to think probably 20 years ago that Baylor was going to win a national championship.
Right.
And he did it.
Yeah.
And he's set for life as long as he keeps recruiting and as he keeps coaching. I mean, you're not, if you fall down to like 5-22 or something in a season, he's probably not set for life. But if he continues to do his job, he's won a national championship. The pressure's not intense on him because Baylor's not a blue blood. That's not their history. He's built something from the ground up, literally, with what he inherited with all the problems that were going on with the program when he came in. Why would you leave that if you can still make the money and you don't have to have the pressure? And I think that's what's going into people's minds when they're looking at Kentucky is like, I think it's similar when Nebraska was looking for a football coach in the 90s. And then after Frank Solich got fired in the 03, you know, they couldn't find anybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted that. They're like, Frank Solich was winning.
Nine games.
And you just fired him. Like, why would I want that job? And I think Kentucky's going to find that out, too.
I think you're right.
He was winning. Why do the boosters want him out? What are they going to do to me
because
if I have
they
a
lost
one bad
in the
season?
Tournament?
Exactly.
You have one
that's,
bad game.
Exactly. That's why the boosters want him out.
Right.
That's why they're reacting that way. But on the outside looking in from somebody that would be in the profession, I'd be like, what are we doing here? Why would I want that job if I can stay here and make all this money? I've got NIL money. Parity's at a max right now probably in college basketball from a whole. I mean, I know UConn has run away with the last two titles, but I wouldn't. Those are a lot of questions that are going to come up. And also, I'm not going to make as much money as John Calipari did either.
No.
So a lot of things go into that. And I think that Kentucky is a desirable job, but there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. And you better have thick skin and be ready for the challenge to go do it. And I feel like if you have any kind of trepidation about it, you just, if you're comfortable with where you're at and you're making a lot of money already, and it's like, okay, let's just stay where we're at. And I think that's what I'd be with Scott Drew if I'm comfortable with my family. They don't want to move and all that stuff and all kinds of things that go into that.
Okay, so it's interesting. I pulled this up and I didn't realize it. So I don't know if Kentucky fans were excited about the idea of Scott Drew, but you're going to push John Calipari out, okay? In the last 3 years NCAA tournament, John Calipari lost in the first round, second round, and first round, okay? St. Peter's. Then he lost second round last year to K-State, and then he lost in the first round this year to Oakland, okay? He finished in the top three in SEC all 3 years, second twice. Mm-hmm. SEC is a pretty good conference. So I pulled this up. The last 3 years for Scott Drew, the records are almost identical. Overall records, almost identical. The league finishes two-thirds tied for first, so almost identical. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize this, but did you know that since Baylor won the national title, which was in 2021, do you know that Baylor has not made it to the second weekend since? Did you know that Baylor, despite having really good seeds, have lost in the second round each of the last 3 years? So you're gonna sit here and get rid of Calipari to go get a guy that in the last 3 years has won two more first-round games at Calipari, but not even been a Sweet 16, neither was Calipari. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem like a major move up. You can argue, well, he won a title more recently. Yeah, he did, but they both have won a title.
Yeah.
And by the way, Calipari's been to more Final Fours and Elite Eights than Scott Drew has, okay, at Kentucky. So it is interesting that, well, we got to get rid of Calipari, or we're tired of him. We need somebody new. And you're going to go to a guy that hasn't even got out of the first weekend the last 3 years since winning a national title. And he had a loaded team that year, much like Calipari had a loaded team in 12 that won the title and beat Kansas and New Orleans. So it is, and you can't get Nate Oates, which to me, that was the guy they should want.
Yeah.
And he had $18 million buyout, which Kentucky could have made it happen. But Oates said he's staying. So Oates is off the board. Scott Drew's off the board. Who are you left with right now? Big names. Like Billy, they talk about Billy Donovan leaving the NBA, coming to Kentucky. They've talked about, which it would make some sense to me, although he hasn't been in college for a while now. They've talked about, see, Rick Pitino wants to come back to Kentucky. I don't think that's going to happen, but who knows? It is kind of funny. A fan base that thinks their job is so good that Calipari ain't good enough for them now can't get guys that aren't as good as Calipari to take the damn job.
Yeah.
I think it's hysterical.
It's...
And where does Kentucky go after this? Like, where do they go? I mean, do you... I joke about Jerome Tang going Kentucky directly from K-State. I joke about it. But if you go far enough down...
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not
sure.
saying Jerome Tang isn't respected. He is. But not his experience. But if you start one go down to an up-and-coming coach that you think could really be a different voice and point things in a different direction, just a whole different look or take... I mean, I'm going to sit here. If I'm Kentucky, I guess, so, you know, we really like, if you really like Scott Drew, why wouldn't you like Jerome Tang? He was on Scott Drew's staff for how long? Maybe Jerome Tang's the guy to go to Kentucky. I'm not saying he should. I'm not saying Kentucky should call him. Well, I'll tell you this. If Kentucky has any interest in Tang, they should call him. If Tang's people have any interest in Kentucky, you should call him. Because of the reason I said earlier, you don't know unless you ask. Now, if you're perfectly happy where you are, you're not the one that's going to be calling. There's no reason to.
Yeah.
But if Kentucky calls Tang's representation or any other coach in America's representation and says, hey, what kind of interest would you have in the job? Then you'll find out if they want to listen or not. Mm-hmm. And if you're any coach in America, you're going to listen. Why wouldn't you listen? Dan Hurley's the one that Kentucky fans want because he just won two straight titles. All sources have said he ain't going to Kentucky. He is not going to Kentucky. Hurley's not going to Kentucky. Now, I say if you put enough money behind it, anything's possible. But all the people close to Dan Hurley say there is no way he's going to Kentucky. Definitely not at this time when he's got a juggernaut and they're going to try to three-peat. And he'll get a raise. He'll get an extension. He'll get newer facilities probably. So maybe there's no reason for him to go to Kentucky. But once again, as you point out, you are following you're following a Hall of Fame coach.
Mm-hmm.
John Calipari's already in the Hall of Fame. So even though he struggled the last few years in the tournament, most coaches understand that you shouldn't be defined all the time by what you do 1 year in a tournament, because pretty much every great coach has lost early in the tournament. In fact, they all have. Mike Krzyzewski lost to Lehigh at 15. Okay, Bill Self's lost to 13s and 14 seeds before. Okay, the great coaches in America get upset in the tournament. It happens. You know why? Just like you say, you got so many chances. If you keep going you keep having great years and winning the Big 12, you're eventually going to knock down that door and win a national title. That's true. You have more chances to make the Final Four. You have a better chance to eventually win the national championship. But when you make it there so many times, you also increase your chances of flaming out early.
Yeah.
Running into an unbelievable team in the first round. And Kansas is very close to losing this year to a 13 seed. So that's why the NCAA tournament is such a crapshoot, and that's why you have to be careful, I think, of overreacting as boosters, as alums, as fans, because you know what? Bill Self had two straight years where he lost as a 4 and a 3 seed to a 13 and a 14, back-to-back years. Krzyzewski had a few years where he lost to teams that are lower seeded. And if you just overreact and got rid of them, where would those two schools be now? I don't know. And Calipari's had three straight years where he hasn't done anything in the tournament. Okay, fine. You know what he did in 2020-21, that was kind of tied in. Actually, that was a COVID year, so that was a mess. That shouldn't be held against anybody. Year prior to that, they were first in the SEC. 25-6 would have been a number one or two seed, and the tournament got canceled. So we don't know what he would have done then. So in fairness, the last time Calipari has done anything was only four tournaments ago, and guess where he went? Elite Eight. They act like he hasn't done anything recently. It's not 4 years ago. COVID wreaks all that. But four tournaments ago, they're Elite Eight. I mean, and you want to get rid of the guy. Well, guess what? He's got a chance to beat you head-to-head and rub it in your face in the conference down the road at Arkansas, and I think it's hilarious. And I think it'd be hilarious if Kentucky gets a coach that is a train wreck. And I know Calipari is probably thinking the same thing.
What's the college basketball version of Bill Callahan?
There you go.
That's who
Billy Gillespie. There he had him. You know, we talk about Nebraska's run people out, good coaches. Kentucky's obviously run out good coaches in basketball. And Tubby Smith, they ran out too, and he won a national title.
Mm-hmm.
So you can run people out, and that's fine and all. But you got to live with the consequences. That's a lesson we can say is today's little motto. Live with the consequences of your actions or inactions. And Kentucky's going to have to live with theirs after basically an athletic director of Arkansas said, how about you? And the rest is history, which leads us to ruin the sports ticket with Jerome Tang and what I was going to say, because Scott Drew wasn't greedy and went to Kentucky. Shame on Scott Drew.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.